Kenneth Giang. Welcome to Worldviews.
Oh, thank you.
Well, Kenneth, you're from Nigeria and a filmmaker. And so I'd love to just begin by asking you kind of what took you into filmmaking. As a Nigerian, it seems like you were probably exposed to a lot of different types of film. But tell us a little bit about what excited you about film and made you become a filmmaker.
Oh, well, I mean, growing up, I actually wanted to always be on the radio because I was exposed a lot to shortwave radio. And so I always listened to BBC in Nigeria. And so I wake up like maybe 4 a.m. to listen to Network Africa and all of that. And so I told myself that, okay, when I'm out of school, I'm just going to get myself involved in radio production and all of that. But then I realized that my voice was not really a radio voice because a lot of people, when I talk to them on phone, they will say, oh, yeah, I mean, hello, ma. And I'm like, no, but I'm actually a man. I'm not a lady. So anyway, I saw a poster advertising the National Film Institute one day. And so I went there. National Film Institute is in Jos, where I come from. So I went there and I inquired about admission. And so I entered the school. And still, I actually thought that maybe I'll be taking some acting classes in order to work on my voice. But then I started writing. So the first short film that I wrote was done by somebody. And so I didn't like the interpretation of what he did with my script. And I told myself, okay, next time when I write, I'm actually going to just do it myself. So that's how I started directing. And so I would say it's actually purely by accident, I think.
Purely by accident. Well, I think you sound great on the radio, by the way. So as a writer, though, somebody took your script and did something with it that you didn't like. So you felt like you were writing something that you intended to be presented in a certain way, and this wasn't, you know, what was done. But do you also think that maybe when you make film that some of us who watch film don't take it in the way that it's meant to be taken?
Yeah, but I think like as an artist, it's always about what it is that you want to say. I mean, a lot of people will have different interpretation of your work, and some might like it, some might not. Some might actually say, okay, this is what it's all about, when actually you were intending to say something else different. So, yes, I think it is okay for people to interpret your work the way they want it to be interpreted. But as an artist, I think like you're always supposed to stay focused and try to express what you think you actually want set out to express in the first place. So, yeah, when I give you my script and I think that the interpretation is not in line with what I set out to interpret, I mean, from my head, then I think that, yeah, I could actually just take it and just do it myself. So, yeah.
Well, you were apparently influenced by a number of different artists and filmmakers. Quentin Tarantino is one of them. Tell us a little bit about some of the people that have influenced your work. And I assume that you probably watched a lot of American film. It's obviously the largest film industry in the world. But others, too, Bollywood. I know Nigerian film is called Nollywood. So it's the third largest film industry in the world. Who are some of the other people that have influenced your work?
Growing up in Nigeria, of course, like we had access to a lot of Bollywood films, I mean, from the north. And so because I'm from the northern part of Nigeria, a lot of people always feel that our culture is closely knitted to that of Bollywood because, of course, you know, they don't touch hands. A man will not touch the hand of a woman in the film, and they will not kiss and all of that, all of those films. So I think like a lot of northerners, because even though I'm from a different language, I speak a different language, but we're all influenced by the bigger language, which is Hausa, and of course, their culture. And so we had access to all of that. And of course, American films and films from Hong Kong, you know, we used to watch people like Jackie Chan, I mean, back in the day. So it was a lot of action films and, of course, Schwarzenegger and, yes, Sylvester Stallone. But then when I got into film school, I started looking at, I mean, film in a different way. I started getting exposed to the works of Quentin Tarantino and Alejandro González Iñárritu. I mean, I watched Amores Perros, and I really liked it. And so after that, I started following his works, Babel, 21 Grams, and of course, Quentin Tarantino too. And so you'll actually see it in my first film that I try to follow the structure almost at the same way they actually tell their stories, because always like, I mean, different strands of stories, but then trying to talk about, I mean, how all these, and trying to like find a connection, I mean, like in their own world that the directors are creating. And of course, like some of the topics that they always talk about, it's not about trying to like entertain people with lots of like, I mean, what people want to see. It's about what they want to tell people. And of course, so some of the times that, I mean, when you watch their films, there are lots of underlying messages that, I mean, you can actually just get from watching their films. So I actually took that to heart. And so, of course, I mean, there were some Francophone films too, filmmakers from French-speaking parts of Africa. I mean, people like maybe Ousmane Sembene, who did Gelwa, and all of that. But the thing is, I just told myself, because from Nollywood, we always love, I mean, sensational stories, like the way Americans tell their stories. But then how can you actually fuse maybe a deep message and not, like, tell the story in a very slow manner like, I mean, Francophone people tell their films? So that is where I actually try to, like, find a balance. And so that is what I actually found in works of maybe Alejandro González Iñárritu and Quentin Tarantino.
So speaking about some of the heavy subjects that you deal with in your film and telling it in a, I guess, a feature film way, but giving us, you know, some real substance. One of your first films, Blood and Henna from 2012, you focus on the 1996 Pfizer clinical tests in Nigeria. Now, this is something that many of us don't understand and even know about, but drug companies like Pfizer and perhaps others that are testing medications, potential new drugs, antibiotics and others on children in other countries and in this case in Nigeria and the outcome there. Tell us a little bit about this story and why this became a subject for you that you wanted to put into a film, in a feature film.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at a lot of donor agencies, they go to the northern part of Nigeria to go and work. And so they do that because they think that a lot of people are not educated. And it's true that we have a lot of illiterates. But in the case of maybe polio, for instance, people are always resistant towards having their children immunized with polio vaccinations. And so a lot of people started saying, oh, these people are really backwards. They don't really understand that this is for the good of their children and all of that. And so I actually got interested. I mean, beyond that, what is it that our people and not taking some of those vaccinations coming from abroad, from these companies. So I saw a film called The Constant Gardener, which, of course, was still done by one of my favorite directors, and Fernando Meirelles. And so I started reading about The Constant Gardener. And if you look at it, it was actually linked to the story that happened in Kano. And I didn't even know that actually there was a clinical test that happened in Kano back in the day. And I was like, okay, so they take the story. Hollywood takes the story. They tell the story through the eyes of a foreigner, which, of course, like, I mean, a white person or American, because, of course, to just give the film traction and a lot of publicity. And so I was like, if this story actually happened in Kano, I should actually tell the story with the locals and through the eyes of the locals. So I decided to research more into it, and then I saw a lot of videos and I talked to a lot of people and I followed the case. And I think why I even went to make the film in the first place was because the case became, I mean, a little messy, because I read an article. I mean, WikiLeaks came up with a lot of articles, and so we actually got some classified documents that was happening. I mean, a conversation that happened about how Pfizer wanted to blackmail our Minister of Justice, that Adwaka, so that they are actually going to drop the case. And so I think it was a case of like maybe 21 billion. I'm not really sure about the figure, but it was a lot of money that Nigerian government was suing Pfizer for. And so at the end of the day, I think they paid like $70 million. And so for me, I thought, I mean, it's a bit of an injustice, not for us, but of course for the people out there. And it's not only that. Clinical tests happen in like Asia and Africa and all of that, so not only in Kano. So I decided to make a film. So what I did was that I actually got some of my friends who are really popular in the Hausa film industry. And so we made a film. And so I wrote a love story about a guy who is actually having problems with his wife concerning having children. And at the end of the day, they had twins. And, of course, the meningitis outbreak came. And, of course, like, I mean, yeah, they found themselves in the camp where the clinical test happened.
So I'm curious about this. Now, you're a feature filmmaker, but this is a topic that might be in some ways really great for a documentary film. So how would you make that distinction as why you would tell this story, you would create the story, a love story that would tell the story about what's happening in Kano or what's happening in Nigeria or elsewhere, and not do it through documentary film? What's the advantage, you think?
Well, so the thing is, when I make a film, it's always about my people first. It's always about trying to like tell them, okay, trying to get my audience first at home before I think of, I mean, international audience. And I don't really think that people will sit through to watch a documentary, I mean, like that. But I mean, so you have to make it entertaining, because if you want to pass across a message from where I come from, you have to put it like in a very nice way. So you make it entertaining, people follow the story, and then, okay, this is what it is. And of course, like one of the things that made me to do the film again, I mean, coming to your earlier question, is because I actually want to people to understand that when people are fighting to not have their children immunized, it's because of things like that that had happened before, and not because they are illiterate.
It's the bad experience that they had. And so the feature film audience is obviously, it's larger. There's the target audience is much larger. The risk, though, is that they think it's perhaps fictional and not true.
Okay, so because at the end of the film, I then got a clip that is actually true. And so, yeah, so when the credit is rolling, you can actually see a true footage of a newsreel talking about the event. So you'll know that, okay, it's not actually a lie.
So you're connecting that real story to it.
Yeah.
Well, so let's talk about your most recent film, Confusion Nawa, yeah. A dark comedy, as it's described. But it focuses on kind of issues of morality and kind of how unfair life can be. Well, we all know life is unfair. What is it about this film? Why focus on unfairness? And what are we supposed to get out of that?
So it was actually inspired by, you know, Fela Nicolapos Kuti's song called Confusion Breakbone. So if you listen to the song, because Fela is really this huge musician out of Africa, I know it's like one of our biggest exports. So we always put him in line with maybe Bob Marley, Michael Jackson, and all of that. And so, yeah, he had this song called Confusion Breakbone. And in it, he's listing Nigeria's, the breakdown of social institutions in Nigeria. You know, lots of confusion, or no drugs, or traffic is messed up, all of that. So we decided, because I come from Jos, and Jos is middle part of Nigeria. So it's sort of like a mini Nigeria. It's a multicultural society. And we had people from maybe the north, the south, the east, from all over West Africa coming to Jos, because back in the day, it was a hub for tin mining. And we grew up, I mean, loving each other and all of that. But then because of politics, people started fighting along religious lines. So what happened is, out of just like a small case, somebody would just like rise up to go and, you know, start chaos, and then people will start fighting, and a lot of people will die. And apart from that, there are so many things that have to do with that. I mean, I feel people in society are not really protected, like maybe the issue of maybe rape and, of course, corruption and all of that. You try to be an honest worker, but then, of course, the whole corruption is going to overwhelm in the Nigerian civil service. So we decided to make a film, I mean, set around a fictitious city about that. And so basically it's about the unfairness of life. And for instance, I mean, the whole issue of being gay, you know, they have passed a legislation that you're supposed to, you can actually be, I mean, if you're actually guilty, you'll go to prison for 14 years. But being gay or not is not the problem of Nigeria. I mean, we have bigger things that legislation could actually be passed on, and not, I mean, that sort of issue. And so people are not really protected. So you find out that we're trying to play with this issue where, you know, the man thinks it is okay for him to take his son to a whole house to go and get cured, other than, I mean, him being gay. So, I mean, you're trying to balance it. So what is morality? I mean, is it morally right for you to do that? Okay for your son, I mean, to actually, like, man, go along this line? So it totally depends on, I mean, where you're actually looking at the film. And a few days back, I got a message from my friend. He was saying that his girlfriend went to work, like, in the bank, and, you know, she got raped by her boss and all of that. And so now we're thinking, how is that person going to actually, I mean, how is she going to, like, resolve it? Because she doesn't really have the law, I mean, backing her up. And most of that's why when we treat that sort of topic in the film, you find out that father at the end of the day decided to, like, take justice in his own hands because he wants to protect his daughter. So I think, like, I mean, when you don't really have a lot of, like, solid institutions protecting the people, everything will just spiral out of control and there'll be so much confusion. So Confusion Nawa is a form of surprise because there's so much confusion. People are like, wow, I mean, such a surprise. There's so much confusion. That's what Confusion Nawa means.
Well, Kenneth, you're taking on some very important topics and big questions, I can see. So thank you so much for being here today and sharing your work with us. We all look forward to watching it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.